From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last month when Headline News Online warned parents with this headline: Kids in cars. Only 19 states have laws against it. Only 19. 31 states allow parents to run an errand, leaving a child in a car for, say, 4 minutes without the parent getting arrested. Not Connecticut, for example, where no child under the age of 12 can be left in a car at any time in any weather. So in Connecticut, you can leave your 11-year-old child in a car on a brisk fall day while you run into the convenience store for a carton of milk, and for that, you can spend a year in prison. 2 weeks ago in Hoboken, New Jersey, a woman returned to her car to find the window had been smashed out. Emergency responders had broken the window after a passerby reported that a child was in the back seat and it was a warm day. The emergency responders discovered after breaking the window that it was a doll in there, and still the first responders were cheered by the community, as they said, you can never be too careful. Well, sadly, we hear reports every summer about a child being left in a hot car, but the numbers are still very low on that. Author and journalist Lenore Scanese is asking her readers to help come up with ways to combat what she calls the hysteria over children in cars. And in fact, Scanese says it's all tied to the larger campaign of over-policing parents and over-parenting children. Scanese is the author of the book Free Range Kids and the blog of the same name. She travels the country lecturing on the subject. She's on the line with us now. Lenore, thank you for taking the time.
Well, thank you so much, Evan, and thanks for a great introduction to the whole issue. Thanks.
Well, there's a lot to talk about this hour,
yeah,
for sure.
So. Right.
And we've got some parents in studio with us. We've got two of the founding board members of Parenting Village here in Rochester. That's Katie Malarkey and Emily Horowitz. Emily, Katie, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Sarah Fitzgibbons is the Clinical Director of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children. Sarah, nice to see you.
Thanks.
All right, real briefly, some definitions here. Parenting Village, what's the mission of Parenting Village? It's only about a year old.
That's right. So the mission of Parenting Village is to foster the healthy development of families in the Rochester area by creating meaningful connection and support for parents. And we envision a mutually supportive community where all parents are empowered to confidently raise healthy, thriving children.
Okay. That's a good definition, a good broad definition there. Sarah, what is the mission for the Society for the Protection and Care of Children? And I ask, by the way, because what you do is a little different than some of the focus that an author like Lenore has, but give me a sense for what you do.
Sure. So through five programs, we serve about 7,000 children and family in Monroe County and some surrounding counties. And we work with kids and families impacted by trauma, abuse, neglect, and attachment disruption.
Okay, so often your cases are real neglect. Unfortunately, sometimes children who come from households that they're not getting a lot of attention, there may be a lot of underlying issues there. Is that?
That's right, sort of on the spectrum, but yes.
Okay, and a little bit different than what Lenore focuses on, but I think there's a lot to talk about here. And Lenore, I want to start with this notion of kids in cars. Look, you know, we're seeing movements to enact new laws in many states designed to criminalize leaving kids in cars. And you've seen the sad stories. These laws have good intention.
Oh, my God, of course.
Yeah, so, and these laws have a good intention. What's wrong with them?
What's wrong with them is that they refuse to make any distinction between 5 minutes in a car and 5 hours in a car. And so if I'm a mom and I know that my kid finally fell asleep and I'm just picking up the ibuprofen and it's there in the drugstore and I can even look through the plate glass window and see my kid out there, I'm not allowed to make the decision to let my kid wait in the car while I run that errand, even though I know rationally that my child is safe. Because the laws act as if that five-minute errand is enough to kill my child, and that therefore I should be prosecuted as a negligent or abusive parent for making a decision that I think is wise. And so I don't like the fact that somebody wrote once to my site about this whole issue, and I'm just going to quote from them because I thought they put it really well, which is that vilifying moms who let their kids wait in the car for 5 minutes won't bring back the kids who were forgotten in the car for 5 hours. Because forgetting the kid in the car, generally when you're on your way to work and you just forgot that it was your day to drop off the kid at childcare, that's the way that kids die in cars, not waiting out a short errand.
You also have linked to a number of stories, et cetera, that indicate that in some ways kids are safer inside the cars during that errand as opposed to pulling them out.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers, there's a whole idea called dangerizing, which is that sometimes we focus on one activity and we decide to dangerize it, whether that's waiting in the car or walking to school, And we neglect the fact that there's a little bit of danger in everything. Yes, in walking to school. Yes, in waiting the car. But yes, in taking the child out of the car, too. More children are killed by what they call front overs and back overs. That's in parking lots and driveways. I'd say about 3 or 4 times more children are killed each year that way than die waiting in the car. And so why have we decided that taking children out of the car is safe and letting them wait in the car is unsafe? And that's something we can discuss.
Yeah, and before I turn to our in-studio panel here, Lenore, what is some of the reaction you've gotten? Again, if you're just joining us, it's freerangekids.com, and that's the name of her book and blog. What's some of the reaction you've gotten from parents across the country on this?
Well, first of all, it's a very hot topic, no pun intended, because we're being exhorted by public service announcements and by well-meaning but misguided journalists across the country telling us never leave a child in a car, as if instantly the child will die the minute you close the door and walk in for the pizza. So some people are saying, I'm so happy to hear somebody sticking up for my right as a parent who loves my child. You know, I love my child, and I'm making the decision. I don't want to drag the triplets across the parking lot to pick up the medicine. And thank God somebody is saying that I should be allowed to make that decision. But then there's a whole lot of people who have been, I would say, brainwashed on the topic to believe that a single second in the car without somebody supervising a child is a death warrant. And the best example I can give of sort of that mania that's racking the country today is that one woman wrote to my site, and she said that she'd gone grocery shopping with her kids, brought them in the store with her, came out, put the two kids in their car seats, you know, buckled them in nice and safe, went to return her shopping cart to the shopping cart corral, which is still in the parking lot, and by the time she got back, which must have been 30 seconds later, another person, I think a woman, I don't actually recall, was waiting there and screaming at her, how dare you leave your children unsupervised? Don't you realize anything could happen? When we're at that kind of fever pitch, where we really don't allow rationality in for even an inch, because we really think in 30 seconds either the children are going to burn up or be transported somehow from their car. Nobody can even get a normal kid out of a car seat in 30 seconds. It's so hard. Then there are people who are ready to hunt me down with pitchforks, thinking that I am deliberately putting children in danger, which is the last thing I would want to do.
I read the story a couple months ago that Salon published online, written by Kim Brooks, called "The Day I Left My Son in the Car," and Kim is, by all accounts, a very engaged and caring mom with 2 kids, 1 and 4, when she was running around before a flight, ran to the store, left her child in the store, ran in and out of the store, and came back, and someone had called police on her, and she returned from the airport with police looking for her, and said it consumed the next years of her life, because she was dealing with the fact that she was looking at potentially a year in jail, marks on her record, et cetera. I know you have had a chance, or at least I assume you've had a chance to communicate with Kim on this, Lenore.
I'm quoted in the article, because she says, I just want to tell you what happened to me today. And I said, actually, if you don't mind, Kim, I'll tell you what happened today, because I hear from moms calling me or writing me all the time. You took your kid to, you know, on an errand with you. Either the kid fell asleep or the kid didn't want to come in. And you made a decision, you know, as we all do every day, a seat of the pants decision. Does it make sense to do this or that? You know, not every decision is optimal. I mean, in this case, I thought it was optimal, but maybe it's not optimal. Maybe you normally would like to take the child in, but you just don't have the time. That's actually what it was with Kim. And I said, and because you left your kid in the car, and because we've been all told to call 911 the second we see a kid in the car, because we're supposed to assume that a child in the car is necessarily abandoned by a negligent, horrible parent who doesn't care if they live or die, call 911 and turn them in, like, to the KGB, because this is a bad parenting moment, and nobody should be allowed a single bad parenting moment, and they must be prosecuted and harangued and preferably fined or thrown in jail, because they have put their child in danger. And Kim said, oh, yeah, actually, that is what happened. And unfortunately, from where I sit at the Free Range Kids blog, which, are, you know, my whole slogan is, our kids are not in constant danger, So people find me because I've written about the topic so much, and then they write and say, this just happened to me. I can't believe it. And it happens to poor people, and it happens to rich people, and it happens to stay-at-home moms, and it happens to working moms, and it happens to dads even. It happens to grandparents. And I feel terrible that all our attention is focused on this one issue, and it's reached a hysterical point. Like I told you, if the lady's getting yelled at for putting back her shopping cart and that she wasn't supervising her children well enough for 30 seconds, that's a point we have to back off from. And we have to assume two things. One is that most parents really do love their children. And if they've left them in the car, it's not because they're so stupid or evil. It's because they think it makes sense. And two is, if you want to be a good Samaritan says, oh, I don't see a parent with those kids in the car. Let me stand here for a couple of minutes and make sure the parent is coming back, as opposed to, I'm going to teach that lady a lesson, I'm calling 911, and then I'm going to drive away because I really don't care about the kids. I really only care about teaching that lady a lesson and sending her into, to the cops.
Yeah, that was the strange thing about Kim Brooks' story. You'd think if the person who called the cops on her really cared, they would have stayed by there. We're talking to Lenore Skenazy, an author and a journalist who writes on freerangekids.com. If you want to join the conversation, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can join the conversation on Twitter, at Evan Dawson. Let's ask our free-range parents, parenting village parents.
No, I hope they're free-range parents.
They may be in some ways, but I also said coming into this hour that, I think there may be a lot of agreement, there may be some disagreement, and I think that can be healthy and productive at times. So let me start with Katie. You've been listening, one of the founding members of Parenting Village here in Rochester. What are your thoughts on the notion of we're going to broaden the conversation in a minute. We've been talking about this issue that seems to be a big issue this summer of kids in cars. What do you think, Katie?
I think actually the first thing that came to mind from what Lenore was saying to me is how this is more should involve community. So I think the example that she gave of, leaving your kids in your car so that you can return your shopping cart to the corral, it's something we all need to do. And I know I've wrestled with that sometimes myself. Do I leave them in the cart? Do I take them over to the corral? Do I leave them in the car? What do I do? But I think that example in my mind is where the community could step up, and instead of standing there and possibly yelling at the parent for returning the car to the corral, they could take the cart back to the corral for them, or, offer some way to assist, an obviously busy parent who's just trying to do the best that they can.
It's a great point.
And so
that's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. And I have had people do that for me, which is really wonderful and really nice. And I think that says a lot.
I love this. I mean, Katie and I have kids roughly the same age. Sarah as well. In fact, I think everybody here roughly the same age.
Yep,
we have a lot of 2-year-olds, which is a very interesting age.
It is.
I call it the negotiating age, where they learn to negotiate. And I had a time where I was coming out of one of the big box stores with my son. This is when he was around 1. I'm carrying him. I'm trying to carry a bag. I'm trying to get to the cart. And a gentleman saw me, and he said, hey, you got to give me that bag. Let me just take that bag for you. And that little thing is a big thing to a parent.
It really is.
All of a sudden, I wasn't feeling judged, because every time you're walking through a parking lot and you're not feeling your best as a parent, it's easy to feel judged. Mm-hmm. And I instantly felt like, wow, he gets it. I love that example there and that idea from Katie. Let me ask Emily, what do you think?
Yeah, I think absolutely that this feels like it connects right in with why Parenting Village was founded, that this ultimately is an issue around community. And I think we so often parent in isolation. I think sort of modern middle class culture, we don't parent collectively. So we don't see each other birthing. We don't watch breastfeeding. We don't see discipline happening. We don't necessarily think, what does that parent across from me need? We don't parent collectively. We don't sort of take responsibility for one another in a way that I actually think is really necessary for people who are parenting, particularly young children. And so I think when you parent in isolation, it does create this kind of culture of fear and anxiety. And I think you're afraid of what's beyond the walls of your house, but you're also afraid of what people are going to be thinking of you. I think there's a lot of sort of people don't know what's right. Oftentimes at Parenting Village, we're meeting with parents and they feel like they don't have a way to get in touch with their own intuition about a decision like a shopping cart or taking a kid into a store or not, because so much feels like we're under the microscope and we're not having conversations together about what it means to parent and what do you do and how is this normal? How might that be normal? So I feel like this ultimately is a conversation really about community and why community is so important, building that sense of community.
What's the Parenting Village website?
It's www.parentingvillage.org.
Okay, and so you get more of an idea of what they're talking about. Before I jump over to Sarah, let me just jump in and say and see if Lenore agrees here. When I was not a parent, I would fly, and the only time I would notice children is when they would cry on an airplane. And now, as a parent, I flew to Los Angeles a year ago, just me. And any parent who knows the first time you really travel without a child after having a child feels like a vacation even if you're going for work. I mean, it is easy. It's remarkable. So I'm on this flight to L.A., and there are three children in hysterics. And you know what? I wanted to walk over to those parents and say, anything I can do. Anything I can do. But I didn't, because part of the point that our guests in studio are making is occasionally you feel like, well, I don't want them to think I'm judging them, or I don't want to, you know, it's sort of their business. So I kind of felt bad about not doing something, but I didn't know. And you're saying reach out.
I'm saying go over to them and say, hey, guys, awesome job. How can I distract one of your kids
for you? As opposed to saying, if your child calls more, I will call police.
Yeah. Right.
And unfortunately, yeah, Lenore, I mean, Lenore's probably heard a story where somebody might have actually done that. I fear Lenore.
Let me tell you my favorite story about, I think I must have asked stories of, like, when did people help you when you had kids in public? And one woman said that she was with her two children, and they were both screaming. And so she was on a plane, and a guy walked by, and he said, let me take one. And he picked up her child, her little baby, and he walked up and down the aisle singing to the little child over and over again. And it was only when he put the kid back down that she looked up and said, thank you, and she realized it was James Brown! So, can you imagine how cool is that? And if he could do it, Evan, you can.
Well, it's a great story. We're going to get to the phones in a second because every line is full, and that's generally what happens when you talk about issues like this. But let me ask Sarah, along these lines, we're talking about the difference between, you see neglect, unfortunately, real neglect that can be criminal or really troubling, and when we're talking about the difference between that and then sort of split-second parenting decisions that end up getting tarred as neglect. But how would you weigh in on this so far?
You know, while yes, I think we're sort of on one end of the spectrum with folks that we see, I would agree with what Lenore said, that I think 99% of parents in the world love and want what's best for their kids. How they get there, their capacity, their ability from folks that we see may need a little support along the way. But I think in helping, one of the things that we do in helping parents make these decisions about sort of what's parenting style versus what's actual neglect, it's a big recipe that you sort of have to consider things about the child, like their temperament and their development and their history of loss and attachment disruption and trauma, but also the parents. So are parents able to accurately and healthily assess pros, cons, risks, benefits of what level of supervision for their kids, what their anxiety brings up? Has parent A been sexually abused? Do they become so anxious that they can't allow their kid to go unsupervised? And that anxiety would actually be more risky. So I think it's sort of this whole recipe that we use to help parents make those determinations about what's healthy parenting for them.
But at the very least, what you're talking about is trying to understand cases individually and the circumstances, as opposed to a one-size-fits-all, if you do this bad, if you do this good.
Absolutely. I don't think there's a standard definition of healthy parenting in the value around what constitutes good black and white supervision for kids.
Let me grab some phone calls here. This is Clint in Penfield. Thanks for waiting, Clint. You're on Connections.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I haven't called in before. This topic is one that's been with me for a long time. It was like 12 years ago. My wife went into a convenience store, and our kids were in the minivan, and they were sleeping, and they were like 2 and 3 years old, or they were very young. And I mean, she could see the vehicle, and a cop came up and yelled at her in the store in front of everybody, and then she called me, and I was only like a mile away at work, and she was all upset and frantic, and just, you know, it was just horrible experience for her. You know, I went down there, and the cop was still there, and I, you know, and I gave him the business, I guess, I would say, in the sense of, it was so ridiculous to almost be comical, but we ended up
except
having
that they
the
law.
CPS came to our house like a couple months later to check on the kids, and I just it makes me so mad when I think about it, and I relate this story to people and end up getting into arguments with them, trying to get a point that across the point that you're getting across so well here, that it's so hysterical to be upset about this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. to the point of being counterproductive. So this is a great, this is an awesome part of the show, and I actually get the cross
and,
to and, people out there.
And Clint, let me jump in here, Clint, before I get Lenore's take on this, because this is her bailiwick. But
can't wait.
Because, Clint, but I want to ask you one quick question before I get to Lenore, Clint, which is, did that event 12 years ago, did that change you as a parent in any way? Did you feel more paranoid, or did you say, hey, that was ridiculous, but I'm not going to let that change me?
You know, I'm sure subconsciously it definitely affected how my wife and I parented, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I would always put across that face of, this isn't a big deal. This isn't the end of the world. And I think that, you know, it's really hard. I was we were young parents, and a lot of things will affect these young people, especially when they're, you know, like you said, they're being judged. They have this aura of what people are saying and what people are thinking. It definitely will affect people. I think it affected us. We were able to get through it, but this sort of mentality, I think, can really have a negative impact on parents.
All right, Lenore.
And the kids itself, just what you're saying, it's truly a negative.
It's
this
truly
sort
a negative.
Of hovering.
Right. It forbids parents to use their own judgment. It makes them second guess themselves. It turns everybody in the parking lot with a cell phone into the KGB. And even if you think your kid is safe from heat and from kidnappers, which they are during a normal errand, at this point it feels like the one thing that you can't be certain they're safe from is somebody deciding to turn them in. And that's why one of the things I'm trying to figure out how to fight over at Free Range Kids is not just this perception of danger every second, even when Clint's wife was in the store for a few minutes and the kids were out in the car, but also turning that perception into law. And I'm just looking, I wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal about this about a year ago, and I'm just going to quote from it for a second, because the laws differ. 19 states now have laws that say that determine whether, you know, what age and how long you can leave your kid in the car. And it says the laws differ in their particulars, but basically they state that a child under age 6, 7, or in Utah, age 9, can't be left alone in a car for more than 5 or 10 minutes. And so in Nebraska, the law is if you let your 6-year-old wait in the car, it's an offense in the same category as allowing the child to be deprived of food or sexually exploited. And in Louisiana, if you do it twice, you leave a kid in the car once, the cops come and tell on you, and then you do it a second time, the second infraction carries a sentence of not less than 1 year in prison with or without hard labor.
Wow. Clint, thanks for the call. And by the way, Clint mentioned he's a first-time caller for the program. We always love hearing that. If you want to join the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Lenore Skenazy's on the line with us. She's the author of Free Range Kids. It's a book and a blog. And as she says, it's kind of a movement. She lectures around the country on the subject as well. And our guests in studio, two guests from Parenting Village, which is just about a year old now in Rochester, Katie Malarkey and Emily Horowitz. And Sarah Fitzgibbons is here, the clinical director of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children. If you're on the line, we're going to get you in a moment. But before we get to break, I want to ask our parents in studio briefly. We're talking about the broader issue of the way, listen to the way Clint felt judged and angry by a police officer, and this happens all the time. Is there, you know, when you become a parent, it is tough when you feel like, we kind of refer to it as the mom wars, right? I mean, it can be very difficult, right, Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had this conversation before. There's some really interesting social media projects around that concept of the mom wars and how to combat them. I think that, again, sort of touching on the sense of isolation and people not feeling so connected to their own internal intuition and also connected to other parents, this paranoia that we're talking about, I think, doesn't just happen because of the media and these horrible stories we're reading about folks in cars. Like, it starts as soon as people have a baby. And all of a sudden, they, there's a lot of information that people are being targeted with that sort of suggests, like, do this, don't do this, this is right, this is wrong. And I think it's very easy to start polarizing as parents and saying, like, I'm on this team, I have this set of beliefs, I'm subscribing to this particular style, and this is what is right and healthy for everybody. And I really appreciated what Sarah referenced before. They're really, a one-size-fits-all is just not appropriate. We really have to have deep and meaningful conversations about parenthood, you know, out in the open, so that we understand there's a, it's complex and there's a lot of different ways to parent really well.
Yeah, and Sarah would probably say, and I'm sure Lenore would agree, that that doesn't mean that certain things aren't wrong. You know, there are certain things we can probably all agree on, but at the same time, this over-nitpicking that Emily talks about is probably the first seed toward the criminalization of certain parents. That, well, that's wrong, and I do it this way, and that way is wrong, and therefore that must be even criminal. And so I guess we're trying to split some lines here, Sarah, but the bottom line is it doesn't mean that nothing is wrong. It just means we can be overly tough on moms especially.
That's certainly true. I mean, we have 60, 70, going on 80 years of attachment research, which shows us what we know about what young kids need, for example. We know that there are certain kinds of emotional availability and sensitivity that kids do need, but that doesn't mean there's not a spectrum to be played with. And again, parents' temperament and values and kids' temperament and values, and again, bringing it back to sort of what we see in our agency, significant true criminal neglect and maltreatment, I think, really need to be factors in there.
Katie, you ever felt judged as a mom? Probably never, right?
Never. I think I'm probably the hardest judge of myself, but I think that's probably true of most parents.
Well, that's a great point, too.
Well, and that let me think of what Lenora said back at the beginning when she was giving the example of, you know, leaving your kid in the car so you can go drop off your cart in the cart corral at the grocery store. And she actually called it, I think in jest, that was a bad parenting moment. And that, and I think that's something that a lot of parents feel, that even just making that 30-second decision that they are a bad parent just for doing that. And I think that's kind of how one of the reasons why Parenting Village got started, that we're trying to connect the community and we're trying to create that village that parents truly need in order to discuss different things like that, so that you can help parents not necessarily feel bad about every little decision that they're making. So.
All right,
can I just say one
Yeah, please, Lenore. Yes, please.
Sorry. So it's Lenore from Free Range Kids. And in my book, I have a chapter called Relax, Not Every Little Thing You Do Has That Much Impact on Your Child's Development. Because we are second-guessing everything we did. You know, I gave him a cookie, but I said I wasn't going to give him a cookie before lunch, and now I'm a hypocrite, and he's going to realize
I've been there.
Easily manipulated.
I've been there the last 24 hours.
Right, right, right. I mean, every second there's some decision you're making, and, you know, most of them have very little consequence. And if you do make a decision that you later regret, okay, so you make the next decision, you know, differently. But it's not everything we're treating as if every second and every decision is life or death. And thank God that's not the case.
Ryan and Geneva, let's take one more call before the break. Ryan and Geneva, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hi. I agree with most of what you guys have been saying. I do think that, a normal, rational parent will do the right thing and would never put their child in danger. But why I do agree with some of these laws is for the ones that disregard that, and that is what happened to me when I was a younger parent. So,
can you elaborate, Ryan, on that?
My child was left in a car for 20 some minutes with it running because the guy who was dating my ex decided that he didn't want to wake her up, and so I got a call, you know, at work to news that I really didn't want. And that was that a good Samaritan had, you know, phoned it in.
But I'm, what are the, and again, I don't want to sort of relitigate a case from your past, and I know you're sharing a lot here, Ryan, but when you said your child was in the car for 20-some minutes, were the conditions rough, or what was the scenario there?
It was close to winter time, but the fact was he also had left the car running, and, I mean, he had no reason, basically, being with my daughter, but this was something I couldn't control. My point is that I do think that to a certain extent some of these laws, they're blanketed, but they're good for people who just should get it but don't.
Lenore, can you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you don't necessarily, you know, I wouldn't leave a car running with the keys in it, with a child in it, or without a child in it. That seems like a bad idea.
Yep.
But if it was, I mean, I have a really old car, but from what I understand, people with newer cars, they often lock the car from the outside, and they can keep the air conditioning or the heating on while they run an errand. And while I would prefer just leaving the windows down if it's the summer, it doesn't sound like it's a dangerous situation. It just sounds like it's a situation that, once again, something that maybe you wouldn't do, but I don't think that the child was in danger. And when we talk about making laws, even because 1,000 people will do it and one of them will do it wrong, and therefore we should criminalize the 1,000 people, I think that's bad, because then you're threatening all these parents with criminal charges for doing something that is not endangering a child. And so you're endangering the parents, because once in a very rare instance, somebody might do something that does endanger a child. I mean, this is what I talk about with the inability to distinguish again. If we have laws saying you can't leave your kid in the car at all or for more than 5 minutes, that's the children aren't going to die in a minute or 5 minutes or 20 minutes. They are the vast majority of children who do die in stationary cars die because they are forgotten there all day for hours and hours, not because they've been in there for a few minutes.
Yeah.
So why are we criminalizing something that doesn't hurt children?
Well, and let me ask Sarah Fitzgibbons, the clinical director for the Society for the Protection and Care of Children in Rochester. You can, let's say there are no laws about children in cars. If you leave a child in a hot car for 2 hours and the child is injured or dies, you are still guilty of a crime, even if the law doesn't have a specific codified section on kids in cars, right? I mean, you've probably seen, unfortunately, you've seen cases.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm certainly no expert in child protection criminal law. But at the least, it's horrible, a horrible decision for parents, and they must be racked with guilt.
Mm-hmm.
I can also imagine that we're talking specifically about the physical impact of leaving a child in a car for 2 hours, but there's some significant impact, potentially, of a vulnerable kid emotionally being left in a car for 2 hours. So, I don't want to discount
yeah,
the importance of that.
Yeah, but we're not talking about the 2 hours. I mean, that's the thing. 2 hours is, nobody thinks that it's a great idea to keep a child in the car for 2 hours. What's been criminalized recently is any parent who leaves a kid in a car even for a short amount of time, and that's what's so strange.
Right, and I think I'm just trying to raise the point that if something does happen to the child, it doesn't have
criminal.
To be codified.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
person is still going to be guilty of a crime.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
there's
right.
31 states.
Criminalized.
There are 31 states that it is not codified about kids in cars, and those parents still can't leave kids in cars to the point of death or injury or harm. That's still
right.
It's still illegal without it being codified in that way.
Right.
And so,
right.
So then the question becomes, when you create these laws, is there a deleterious effect or et cetera? And that's kind of what we're looking at. So,
that's a great question.
Let's take the shortest break in radio. Come right back with Lenore Scanese and our in-studio panel, parents from Parenting Village and Sarah from the Society for the Protection and Care of Children in Rochester. And we're going to talk about some other events in the news recently that you might have heard. A parent arrested for swearing in front of a child. We also have Lenore's been writing about this app that will allow parents to disable a child's phone if the child doesn't answer. What are their thoughts about that? All of that and more next on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections here on WXXI and on WEOS in the Finger Lakes. We're talking about parents and whether parents in modern American society are sort of over-policed for their behavior. I'm going to get a couple of questions about topics that were in the news this past week. Here's the story that was written in the Huffington Post. A mom arrested for using a swear word toward a child. And let me read from this. This is from the Huffington Post. Quote, dropping an F-bomb in front of your kids can land you in jail. Mom Danielle Wolf was grocery shopping at a Kroger store in North Augusta, South Carolina, when she was arrested for disorderly conduct after cursing in the presence of her two daughters. According to the incident report from the North Augusta Department of Public Safety, Wolf yelled at her children and told them to, quote, stop squishing the blank bread. Another woman at the store then approached the mother, told her to stop using that language, and called police, and Wolf was then arrested. Now, Lenore, it's hard for us to comment exactly on this because we weren't in the store. Mm-hmm. We didn't see if it was really aggressive and borderline abusive. The incident report makes it sound like probably a bad moment for that mom, but I'm not sure criminal. It's hard to judge these without being there is what I'm saying. But what are your thoughts when you read that report?
Well, my thoughts are that, boy, I would probably be in jail, too. You know, I live in New York. I wish I had a better vocabulary. I don't always. But the overarching idea is that, like we were saying, that all the people in the studio have been saying, too, like there are many, many different ways of parenting and many different styles of human beings. And just because I don't like what you do or I wouldn't do it that way, you know, I wouldn't serve the non-organic Cheerios, or I wouldn't let my kid play in the backyard till he's 12, or I wouldn't, or I shouldn't. It doesn't mean that it's criminal. And I don't understand this belief that anytime we disagree with somebody else's parenting style or decision, we think that we can call the police and have the state come in like super mommy and decide, you know, and chastise the person we disagree with. I mean, either you can say something or not, but the idea that you should always call in the authorities, the whipping out of the phones and dialing 911 with a smug smile because you have the law, you know, the whole power of the state to come down and say, I wouldn't do that, lady, and I disagree, and you're a bad mommy, and here comes the police and the handcuffs. I wish the police had nothing to do with parenting decisions except for, like we were talking about earlier with one of your guests, if we're talking about true abuse and neglect, a child with no food, a child who is beaten, not a child who is eating, you know, a candy bar at 7 at night, and I think that that's no time for a candy bar.
I wonder if any of our parents in studio disagree on this one, you know, because that can be hard, and again, I'm going to stress again, we don't know exactly the scenario, but anybody disagree here?
I mean, I it's a tough one. I, you know, the criminalization is one thing, and that feels extreme, and I get that. I mean, clearly, I'm not going to sit here and feel like, oh, sure, let's arrest that person for using that language in front of their children. And I'm holding in mind sort of the feelings and the experience of those children,
yeah,
and the feelings and the experience of that parent. So what I wish would happen, what I wish we lived in, was a culture and a society where somebody did go over to that mom and say, like, hey, it sounds like you're really struggling right now. Or, mm-hmm. hey, you know, or sort of directed attention to kids. You know, maybe one person talks to the kids and gives them a little support, and somebody else comes over to the mom and says, hey, you know, this, it sounds like you're having a tough time. Can we help you at all? I mean, that's the piece that I feel like addressing the choices around parenting that really maybe aren't so effective, mm-hmm. or really do have negative consequences for our children is not inappropriate. Policing them is one thing, but supporting is another, and that's what I wish.
And again, you're going back to that theme of show some support that doesn't feel judgmental but says, we've all been there, can I help you in any way?
Yeah, because it's not okay for your kids right now.
Yeah, you know? Gotcha. Anybody else here?
Well, Sarah? Yeah, I appreciate Emily talking about sort of this difference between what's criminalization and what could potentially, not for maybe even the majority, but be a red flag for families to sort of pay attention and take notice of, am I being the best parent that I want to be? Are my kids reaping the rewards of my best parenting, and how those moments can actually inform who we are as parents. And I really appreciate what Emily is saying, is that there are kids involved here too. It's not just about the impact on parents. It's that a mom, me, for example, swearing in front of their kids, which I'll say happens, is one thing. If it's a pattern of pervasive neglect or emotional abuse, then that's another.
Yeah. Let's grab a call. This is Kate in Rochester. Kate, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Kate.
Hi. I'm a pediatrician, so I need to correct something that was said earlier. Children can absolutely die in a car in 20 minutes. They get overheated in less than 15 minutes if the car is hot, and it gets very hot in the car even when it's not a particularly hot day. So I thought that needed to be said. In addition, I've been involved with child protective situations in 5 states, and the person that was arrested for swearing at their child, that was likely one of many things that that person did to their child.
Hold on though, Kate. Do you know that that's the case, or are you making an assumption? Because I don't know.
I don't know it either, but I think your guys are making an assumption that that was the only thing the person did.
No.
Because journalists, especially online, tend to find something dramatic.
Kate, did I say several times that we don't know all the details surrounding it?
I agree, and I just wanted to make that point. You're making a large point about how this is the wrong, this is the wrong idea. I completely agree that people are overdoing all this protection thing, that large older children do not need to be left in the, need to be fussed about left in the car. But little kids can be overheated very easily, and who's going to make a judgment about exactly how hot it is outside?
I think
and
the parents.
How long are they being let? And 15 minutes goes by very fast.
Okay, and I appreciate that. So Lenore, mm-hmm. Kate is saying from a pediatrician side, mm-hmm. parents may not realize that a kid can overheat that quickly, and that's why these laws may be necessary. What do you think, Lenore?
Well, I'm thinking back to my childhood, some of which was spent in a car, and I have a feeling that everybody there today probably spent some time in a car while their mom ran an errand. Am I correct? I'm talking to the
sure.
studio there.
Yeah, let's say yes. I can't recall specifically,
yeah.
perhaps.
Yeah? Yeah, so I think that in all these cases, what I would like to defer to is the parents. I mean, you know what the weather is, you know your child, you know your community, and you know what you're about to do. And if you, taking these things into account, think that your child is going to be safe, if it's a hot day, I agree, 20 minutes could be too long. Roll down the windows is also a really good idea. People are afraid to roll down the windows because they think their children will be kidnapped, but that's extremely rare. And I can't find any stories of a child kidnapped from a parked car. Once in a while, there's a car that gets taken with some children in it accidentally, and once the guy realizes there are kids in there, it's generally an abandoned car instantly. But I think that what we're doing in these cases when we start saying, let's arrest everybody who lets their children wait in a car at any moment because it could become one of these very, very rare instances when a child dies, is what I call worst first thinking. And that is coming up with the worst case scenario first and proceeding as if it's likely to happen, even though I hate getting into numbers, but the numbers of children who die in cars every year, there's about up between 30 and 40 every year, and 80% are forgotten there or got in without the parent knowing it. It's not children waiting out an errand. And to criminalize parents who say, look, I know I'm going to be in just getting the pizza, it'll take between 5 and 10 minutes, maybe it'll go to 15 minutes, as if they're putting their children in mortal peril is something I wish we weren't doing.
Well, let's let Kate, a pediatrician calling in, respond. Kate, go ahead.
I think that you may have good judgment, but I really don't think that everybody does.
Yeah.
And we also don't have complete control of what happens to us if you're prepared to drop everything and run out. I personally don't know when 15 minutes has passed all the time.
Right, but there's also, when we say you don't have complete control, that is so true. That is so true about everything. And we don't have complete control when we take our children out of the car either. Children rarely die in cars, and they rarely die in parking lots, but either way they could die. And we've decided to criminalize the parents who say, oh, the odds are pretty good that my kid is going to survive this errand while I pick up the pizza. But we haven't criminalized the people who say the odds are pretty good, I'm going to drag my child across the parking lot. Both of them have made a decision that isn't crazy and isn't negligent and isn't dangerous. And in each case, there is a tiny chance
of something going wrong. But somehow
we
have criminalized
your child, and the other you're not.
Right, right. So if your kid dies because you're supervising them, all bets are off. But if your kid dies because you're not supervising them, then you're bad. It's just a strange idea. We've criminalized the idea that a parent can make a choice based on convenience, knowing her child, knowing the neighborhood, knowing the temperature, having lived 20, 30, 40 years in the world, and basically understanding how physics works. Anyone who makes a decision that seems rational to themselves is wrong because of something that can very, very rarely happen. That's the worst first thinking. Because something terrible could happen, we're going to arrest this mom. But something bad could happen when you take the kid outside of the car. Something bad could happen while you're driving the car. That's the way, the number one way children die is driving.
If anybody makes a decision that's rational to themselves, then it's an okay decision. And that makes very little sense because lots of people's rational decisions to themselves are not rational to the rest of the world and are not safe.
But I think the decision to let your child wait in the car for 5 to 10 minutes is both rational and safe, and we are looking at it irrationally.
Okay, and that's your opinion, and that, I guess, is what this show is about.
Right.
Kate, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. And again, from the pediatrician standpoint, we don't mean to belittle the notion.
One pediatrician standpoint.
Yes, but I don't mean to belittle the notion that kids can be in danger in a car in a very hot situation in a short amount of time. I think what Lenora is saying is most parents get that, and most parents, we don't see a whole lot of, unfortunately, well, I think I'm just going to stop and allow the comments to stand on both sides here. By the way, before I get to the phones, all of a sudden the phones blew up again, and we're going to get to as many as we can real briefly. Coming up in October, I hope to have Peter Levenheim on the show. He's a local author. He wrote a book called In the Neighborhood after a murder on his street about wanting to get to know his neighbors. And he found that around Halloween, nobody wants to let kids trick-or-treat around him because they all worry that there are sex offenders. And Peter always says there's never been one case he's found anywhere in the world of a child abducted while they were trick-or-treating by a sex offender. And yet we,
right,
especially in the media, seem to play up this notion that every trick-or-treater is at imminent risk every year. And so that's when Lenora said worst first. I recalled what Peter Levenheim told me, which is that don't think every one of your neighbors is a sex offender. And, don't do worst first. So anyway, let me get back to Susan in Rochester. Go ahead, Susan.
I'm calling because I was thinking about some of the statements that your commentators there are making, and, you know, and I think about Ferguson, what's happening in Missouri, and someone made a comment about different people have different styles, and there are many styles, and I just think about how if you're black or Hispanic parent, our culture requires that we parent differently to make sure that our children understand what racism does and to people, and that they really understand that they're at a risk that isn't faced by European children every day, every moment of every day. So I'm just wondering what your commentator has to say about that, because so far, and as I've been listening, I haven't heard any more of that part of parenting addressed.
All right, thanks.
And
for the,
I'm going to hang up. And
yeah, thanks for the call. Time is getting short. Sarah, you're nodding. Go ahead, Sarah, first.
I'm nodding just because I think it's a wonderful point, and I think we need to be considering culture. We need to be considering cultural bias, our community. I think when Lenore talks about assuming, you know, we assume that we know our children, we know ourselves, we know our community safe or safety, that we don't. And some parents don't know that more than others for a variety of really understandable good reasons. So I don't know if that relates to this specific caller, but that's what it brought up for me.
Lenore, go ahead.
Oh, I definitely think that different races face completely different realities and concerns.
Yeah, I don't think we have any disagreement there. Let me see if I can go. I'm going to go against my best judgment and try to get one more call in here. Cindy Fairport, 30 seconds. Go, Cindy.
Cindy from Spencerport.
Oh, Spencerport,
okay.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to give you an example of this attitude of feeling empowered to comment to parents out of the blue. Our son was an infant, parked in the driveway after I'd run errands. I could look out the window and see him. The windows were open. He was peacefully sleeping, and a delivery man had no problem reprimanding me for leaving him there when I was washing dishes and watching him the whole time. I was not at all happy and did not feel like I should question my own judgment. I was 28. I wasn't a teenage
right.
mother.
Cindy, thank you for the call. I've been there. When my son falls asleep in the car, which he often does when he won't nap, I have parked that car, left him in sight with me, and let him go as long as you want in the driveway, buddy. So I never thought of myself as a criminal. Lenore, we are out of time with you. It's freerangekids.com, and that's the book as well. Thank you for taking the time. You see that a lot of people are fired up about it, Lenore.
Right. No, I really appreciate the chance to talk about this. I'm sick of the war on parents.
And let me also say thanks to the folks from Parenting Village. Katie Malarkey, Emily Horowitz are here. Thanks to Sarah Fitzgibbons from the Society for Protection and Care of Children. And we appreciate all of our guests and callers as well. Thanks, everybody in studio.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you, Lenore. And a short break, and coming right back, a little bit of a different theme. We're going to try to define modern feminism in the next hour. Another simple topic, right? Stay with us.